This week on the Dragzine Podcast, Boosted GT, a.k.a. Chris Hamilton, joins us on the show to talk about how he became a street racing legend, what goes into a race night on Street Outlaws, and a whole lot more. So, pull those belts tight. Get ready to put it in the beams. The Dragzine Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Dragzine Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. This week on the show, Chris Hamilton joins us and kind of pulls the veil back a little bit on what really happens on Street Outlaws, tells some stories about kind of the legit street racing scene that he's been a part of for a long time and, you know, what kind of drew him to that. So without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my first guest of 2020 is none other than Chris Hamilton, a.k.a. Boosted GT. What's going on, Chris?
What up, Brian? How's it going, dude?
Oh, doing good, man. Kind of chomping at the bit myself to get back in the saddle for some racing action down at South Georgia. I'll be saddling up for that soon, and I'm sure with how you roll, you're probably racing somewhere sometime all the time, right?
Yeah, actually, we just got done racing last week in Florida, but to be honest with you, I'm going to take like the next month or possibly 2 months off just to refresh all my stuff because we have beat the crap out of it. So I need like a month or two.
Yeah, that's the dirty little secret a lot of people don't realize is that even in, you know, in the, I use air quotes, TV world, that, you know, when you beat on stuff, it doesn't matter. You're beating on it, and eventually it needs a breath. It needs to be refreshed, and you need to refresh because it's definitely not as easy as what people think.
Yeah, it's that's like, you know, people that watch like the show, like I get the impression from them that they just assume that these cars just show up ready to race and like there's nothing else that really happens before or after the race. Like they're just ready to go, right? So it's like totally not like that. I mean, there's hours upon hours of stuff that goes into these things, as you know, just to get them ready to race. And then after you race, of course, you have to maintain them. So,
oh yeah, it's minimum. If you're not putting 20 hours a week in your car between races, you're going to have problems at the race, plain and simple.
Exactly.
And,
no,
and that's being nice and conservative if everything's okay.
Yep. You're absolutely right, man. I mean, it's just, gosh, it's almost a second job, you know? So, yeah, but I love it. We enjoy it. We do it because we love it, right? So.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, it's sort of like, you know, physical labor, you know, when you're like working out, there's a certain level of it sucks, but then when you're actually doing it and enjoying it, you embrace the suck and when you let go of the button, it makes it worth it. And you forget about being up till 3 a.m. and dealing with stupid issues and everything else.
Yep, you're absolutely right, man. I couldn't put it any better, but that's exactly right.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't even know this myself, full disclosure. We talked about this in, you know, our pre-show talk. Is, you know, I remember seeing, you know, the yellow car and kind of hearing and seeing, you know, on 1320 video stuff and all these internet videos. But I've never really heard the story that, you know, how did the legend of the Boosted GT, how did you, you know, end up like this? Because I'm sure you just weren't born awesome. You know, how did you end up a street racing legend?
Dude, I'm about to date myself back like 2004 almost probably. I guess let's start at the beginning, right? So, I mean, going back to high school, I had like a little Chevelle, right? And I would just, you know, go around with my friends and we would just kind of race around up and down the road. And I mean, it was nothing fast, right? I mean, we had like 400 horsepower, right? So it wasn't anything special, but that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, but back in the day, that was huge.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking like 99, somewhere in there, 98, right? You know, had a little Chevelle. My buddy had a Chevelle. I mean, we both had two little Chevelles. We just go kind of hauling butt around town. And then, you know, so I started with a Chevrolet, believe it or not. And then kind of just, you know, it all goes from there, right? You sell something, you trade up, you keep buying something to get something faster. And then I got into a Mustangs and started with a Fox body. And that was my first turbo car, a little red GT. And it was I didn't know what I was doing. It would just spin all over the place, and but I was having so much fun with it, right? I mean, it probably made like 600 horsepower, and it would, it would break the stock block all the time, blow head gaskets, but I loved it, And then I finally got my first yellow car. That would be the original yellow car. I bought that from a guy that lived in my same town. It was a Pro Charge car. And the day I got it and picked it up, I ripped all the Pro Charge stuff off of it and immediately, decided I was going to make it a turbo car. And I mean, the chassis was nice compared to what I had. And dude, I mean, from there, I just started street racing it. I got hooked up with Blimpy, and that was when I first met Chief and those guys. I mean, we're talking like 2005, somewhere in there, maybe 2004, 2005. And I'll never forget the first ever cash days I went to was up in Oklahoma, and it was insane. Like, never been anything like it. I mean, I don't know. I think I want to say like the pot was like $4,000 or something. Like, in comparison to today's pots, it wasn't much, but I don't know. It was just insane, dude. And I mean, that all started from there. We started going up there, they started coming down here, and it was just back and forth with those guys for like years and years. But I don't know. That's just kind of the history of how it all started, is with those guys. So, everybody kind of assumes that, I kind of just, just kind of moved up there one day just to try to be on the show. I mean, that's really not the case at all. Like, I was racing with these guys long, long, long before the show was ever thought of. So,
Yeah, that's what's kind of wild about that whole deal is that people like it's funny. Street Outlaws has done so much for the racing community. I talk about that all the time. You guys put a lot of life back into drag racing, but just so many people don't realize like how much happened before the show and how many different famous racers now and media people were tied to what was going on then and how it all has just kind of been. It's almost like you're getting to see the genesis of it now, like all of it evolved now and didn't see like back in the day when it all really started.
I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. So, for people that are listening, I'm going to give you a homework assignment. Like, for those of you that think that we just started on the show street racing, do me a favor. Go to 1320video.com, look at some of his first ever DVDs he ever did. I'm talking like way back, 2005. And, they're all titled Cash Days 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like, buy those DVDs. They're not much money. Buy them, and you'll see how it all really started. I mean, it's all documented, right? I mean, the history of it's all documented there. And we're talking, this is long before Pilgrim Studios or Discovery or anything, any of those guys came on the scene. So, I mean, it's all there. Like, the genesis of it and how it morphed and evolved, and the cars got faster, and next thing we're dragging bumpers on the road and hitting mailboxes and doing all kinds of dumb stuff. It's all on there. And document, and it's really, really cool just to see how it's grown.
And if you look back at some of those videos, you'll see this mysterious, rather large tan man with his face blacked out or blurred out that sounds a lot like a certain member of the cast kind of leading the cash days in a bed of a truck at one point, I believe, correct?
Yeah, oh yeah. That's absolutely right. I mean, we're all the guys you see on TV, I mean, for the most part, they were all there at the very beginning. I mean, for the most part, most of them were there at the very, very beginning. 2005, 2006, Cash Days 1, 2. I mean, they were all there. I mean, gosh, I can remember sitting on the streets with, Dominator and Chief and Dave and Bonza and those guys, way back, way, way back.
I'll have to look through. My dad owns Monza's original Monza, strangely enough. And
Really? That's
yeah,
pretty cool.
he bought that to f so he could finish the split bumper. And I remember we found pictures of that car, like street racing. And I'll have to run back through some of those pictures and see if I can see you in any of them. Because I know I saw Chief in a few of them and Doc, but I'll have to see if you pop up in any of those old school pictures.
Oh, I definitely will be there. I'm pretty sure are you talking about the red one with the flames on the front of it or whatever? Or what was whatever was on? Was it red?
Yep, it's red. It's still red to this
Yep.
day.
Yeah, I mean, me and Jerry actually raced, I believe, in the finals of a Cash Days. I mean, dude, and you know, back then it was, you know, small tire, big tire, it didn't matter. Like, everybody just raced, right? It didn't matter what tire you were on. So that kind of was the start of where big tires really started becoming faster than the small tire cars on the street, for sure. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Jerry's car was fast back then. And that was a cool little car.
Oh, it's well built. He actually just before Christmas fired it up and is getting ready to bring it back to the track next year.
That's awesome.
So it lives. It was actually almost going to become a Dragzine project car, but Dad has a hard time getting in and out of the Firebird that he had. So he asked me if I wanted to take his fourth gen Firebird with a full cage in it versus the Mons, because the Mons has a swing out on it. So I was like, hey, you know, cool, I'll take a Firebird. But part of me wanted to drive. Just have that car and race that car just because of kind of the history behind it. It's like I said, it's a well-built car and it
Yeah.
works.
Yeah, that thing worked real good. I mean, Jerry, you know, beat me pretty handily on my when I had my original yellow Mustang. I mean, that car was fast for what it was back then. So, you know, I can still remember to this day what road we raced on and all that, man. It was a blast.
What's the craziest, early day memory or story you might have racing the yellow car where it was kind of like it sunk in, like, well, this is kind of sketchy, fun, crazy.
I would say, oh my gosh, I would probably say when we went to race in St. Louis, you know, all the Oklahoma guys loaded up, the Texas guys loaded up, and we went to St. Louis. There was Chicago guys there, there was Kentucky guys there. We all met in St. Louis to race on this, you know, it was a beautiful road, long, you know, straight, long, you know, somewhat wide, in an industrial park. It was perfect, right? And I can remember I was the, I think, the second pair down, and I drew a car by the name of Brown Sugar, which was, you know, I didn't know, but it was a pretty fast car. And you know, my car was pretty fast back then too. And I can just remember, you know, we both launched, and about probably 250 feet, 300 feet, I lost a transmission line on that road, and it was like I drove over a piece of ice. And this is on 1320 videos, DVD. I sound like a commercial for him, but he got this all on camera, dude. I mean, I go right almost up in the grass, and then over across lanes, almost into the median. And you know, I never crashed. I think all I did was bend a rim, but I can tell you, I was in there going 100 miles an hour with my arms trying to keep that thing on the road. And that right then is when I realized, I was like, okay, this is getting wild. But we can still sit here and laugh about it, because nothing really happened, you know, other than I lost my $1,000 buy-in because I crossed and lost the race. But I mean, at least I didn't pile my car up.
Yeah, that's I've dealt with that firsthand when transmission lines fail and cars impact things at a high rate of speed because it just yeah when you get on transmission fluid, it's literally that's the best way to describe it. It's like ice, big time.
It was, and of course, you know, I was that guy that ruined the road because I dumped like 10 quarts of transmission fluid on the road, and I'm going across both lanes trying to keep it from crashing. Well, of course, I'm dumping fluid as I'm doing that. So, you know, I was the guy that kind of jacked that road up, and you know, we never finished the race, and I felt terrible, but at the same time, I was like, you know what? I didn't crash my car, so I don't feel too terribly bad. But
You could attest to this probably as much as anybody else. If you can put it back in the box and it's not knocking, smoking, and banging, and all the body panels are pretty much where they started, it was a good day.
yep, you're actually right. I mean, we pushed it back on my little open trailer, and I was like, well, all right, I guess we're gonna go home now. And you know, that's where we went. We of course, $1,000 lighter, but yeah, that's racing.
Yeah, and to me, one of the things I'm a drag racing nerd. I like anything loud, fast, and dangerous. And one of the things that kind of always intrigues me about no prep racing, which in my opinion, like no prep racing and street racing are kind of, extensions of one another, but the amount of side bet money as well as some of these buy-ins that get thrown around out there, it's enough to make some people's stomachs probably a little bit queasy if they knew the amount of money that changed hands at times.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you know, I mean, gambling in itself, I mean, that builds up hype around the race. I think it's cool, but you know, me myself, I still got a normal job, so you know, some of these guys bet like 5 or 10 grand a race. All right, you'll never see me betting that much because, quite frankly, I mean, you know, five grand to me, I'm like, oh my God, if I lose that, Jesus, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, no
So,
doubt.
but I mean, you know, we don't mind gambling. It's just not like at the high level that some people will, you know, we'll throw out there. But you know, we like to make it a little interesting, but just not a whole lot, you know. So.
Oh, it's funny. I talked with the Mario and J.R. Gray about their
Yeah.
big race they had at Lights Out, and I was standing there, and like the level of electricity in the air was just unreal. And it grudge pots are a lot like big money bracket racing splits. You really don't talk about it. It's not good. But from what I kind of gather between those two guys and the conversations, there was enough money to buy a very nice motor home being thrown around, I'm guessing, between most of those camps.
I think that if this is the race I'm thinking of, didn't they race for like you know yeah exactly I don't think I'm gonna give the amount, but I know exactly what race you're talking about, and it was giant. Like, dude, I think that's more than my house is worth, so yeah.
Yeah.
That was insane.
Yeah, there was a lot of like legit money flowing around there. And you hear people that like to hype up the numbers and just read between the lines and hearing the things that I heard from just the different people that there was a good amount of money, not only between those two, but just between, that's what a lot of people don't realize, is that these camps, they start betting all of this money. And this happens with street racing too, because I'll see this on the starting line at these no prep races, that there's people there just constantly betting on cars and money's always changing hands. And it's just this, you don't see that kind of stuff in an NHRA race, let's put it that way.
No, you don't. You don't. And you're absolutely right. Like the no prep races, there's lots of gambling that goes on there. Street races. I mean, you know the almost universal symbol of someone pointing to one lane or the other. You know what they mean. You know what they're wanting to do. And that happens at pretty much every street race I go to, and every, you know, grudge track or no prep race, you know, or outlaw track. You'll see it going on.
Well,
It's awesome.
it ducks races. I always see the same cast of characters there gambling either on the starting line, or there's this one dude that runs like he's like the bookie gambling service between the people on the starting line and along the money line on the fence, and he's just getting people to bet money. And I mean, they're hooting and hollering and they're all having a good time. And
Oh yeah.
I was like, man, I just wish that maybe at one of these events where I'm not working, I'll just go to the money line and see who I can take, because I know a little bit more about these cars than what
Yep.
some people let on, who's going fast, what's going on. I'm like, man, there's some legit money to be made there if you know how to take some smart bets.
Yeah, and you know, and I can tell you know, I'm gonna tell on myself a little bit, but like with the no prep king races, you know, I'm on the starting line for every race, but guess what? Like, I'm not just standing there. Like, I'm gambling people. I'm betting people too. I mean, I know the cars. I know which car's fast, which car's not running good. I mean, I can tell because I get to see every single pass they make. So, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and say I don't go home with some extra money every race, because I do. Because, you know, I gamble also. I mean, you know, it's just a part of it.
Oh, I watch you guys. When I went to the first No Prep Kings race, when I went to my first one at Bowling Green, when that was just total insanity, I was watching dude like racers gamble there. And then my wife and I went to the Norwalk race this year, and we were up in the media center. I was watching guys gamble. I forget, it was one of the main cast character guys. I think it was Daddy Dave was sitting there gambling away with people on the starting line and
Oh yeah.
taking money, losing money, just cutting it up and having a good time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's every race. So, I mean, but that's just the atmosphere at those races. But you're right. It's not something you're gonna probably ever see at in an NHRA race or anything like that, you know, or a pro mod race. You're just not gonna see it there.
No, it's funny to kind of travel between these different racing worlds and see how these, everything has its place in drag racing. I'm a firm believer in that. You know, you got your big money bracket racers that are just, they're surgeons on the stripe and on the starting line. You know, you got your heads up racers that are trying to, you know, basically it's killing ants with a thermonuclear device with horsepower. And then, you know, your no prep street guys. It's watching, I will never forget my first no prep race at the one of the Dirty South races at the finals at Hattiesburg. And just watching how skillfully guys got down the track on the very edge. It was totally insane to see that, like, that delicate ballet of horsepower driving and what it took to make it happen. And I was like, all right, now I used to think no prep was dumb until I saw that. I'm like, the light bulb went on. I saw everything. I'm like, now this makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, you get on a true no prep surface, and I mean, the most horsepower is not going to win. It's all going to come down to power management and who can, you know, pretty much force the car down through the surface and get to the stripe first. I mean, you can't just expect to out horsepower everybody, you know what I mean? So that's the kind of thing that makes it appealing to a lot of people, because the lower budget guys have a chance, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's, you know, it doesn't matter if, you know, you are one of these teams that has the big money baller dollars. It does not matter, because on any given Saturday night, you could, you know, you make a slightly wrong tuning call and you're going to have a bad time against somebody.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Which brings me to another thing that, you know, cringeworthy things I see on the interwebs. Is that when I see people, oh, it's fake. That racing's fake. I'm like, there's so many times where I have to post abort, where I'm like, you know what? Let's not have this fight. I'm going to lose brain cells arguing with this person because they think they know what's up. And yep. I've talked to a lot of the different racers, and, you know, Reaper Goad put it the best. You know, he's definitely, you know, he's such a soft-spoken guy and so tactful in how he approaches things. Of course, if anybody that knows James knows that so far, you know, that's not how he rolls. But he's told me many times. He said, if it was fake, I wouldn't have done it. He goes, that's just not how I roll. And I'm sure that you can attest to that too as well. That, you know, there's a lot of heated stuff that happens on the legit portion of the racing.
Yeah. No. You're absolutely right. You know, there's those people that think, you know, at the beginning of the season, we get handed some piece of paper that pretty much, you know, like the WWE basically tells us, okay, you're going to lose this race, you're going to win this one. Oh, by the way, you're going to probably get in a scuffle with this person, but don't worry, it's not going to be that bad. And then you're going to finish third. It's like, dude, you know, that is so far from reality. Like, you know, the TV show, don't get me wrong. I mean, they want stuff that's entertaining, and controversy is entertainment, right? But they don't inject it in, like, they don't force anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just pretty much just let it happen. And the racing is, you know, real. They don't decide who's going to win or lose. I mean, we're legit trying to beat the crap out of the other person that's in the other lane. I mean, that's just what we're trying to do, right? And you know, people always say it's fake. I mean, they just really don't have a clue about what's going on, you know, and with the street stuff, like the show on the street. I mean, yeah, the road is closed down, but look, I mean, that's the extent of control. I mean, and they have to do that, right? I mean, you know, Discovery is a, you know, multi-billion dollar corporation, owns it, whatever, you know. I mean, they can't have us on a road that's not closed down, and then we plow into someone, and then guess what? Someone owns half of Discovery, right? So, I mean, there's liabilities that have to happen, and to film a successful show. So, but as far as the fake stuff goes, dude, I hear it every day. My PM box stays full of people just steady telling me about the scripted fake stuff. I'm just like, all right, I don't even respond back to them. It's not really, it's pointless to respond back.
Yeah, I could only totally imagine some of, you know, the all caps horrible things that get sent, because I see them in other areas of other Facebook pages that I manage, and you just it hurts sometimes. It really, really hurts to think that people don't grasp that, you know, that this isn't, you know, the OC or whatever. This is, you know, it's as real as it gets.
Man, Brian, I'm going to tell you, dude, like, I love the fans of the show. Like, they're the reason why we are still on the air. They're the reason why we're successful. The show's successful. They are the reason. But some of the people like take it so seriously. Like, I can tell you, we make or break someone's Tuesday based on what happens on Monday night. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Like we decide that they're gonna have a terrible Tuesday based on how we perform on Monday, on whatever's aired on Monday is gonna decide how the rest of their week goes. You know what I mean? So, I mean, some of these people live and breathe this, and they're very passionate about it. And those same people don't really, they're not drag racers. They started watching the show. Some of them probably never been to a drag strip, which, dude, I love it in a sense, but also they don't quite understand like what really goes into racing. You know what I mean?
Well, kind of going off of that, what blows my mind is how many times I've been at, Outlaw Armageddon or No Prep Kings race or other event, and I've heard people say, I never have been to a drag race until I watched the show and I wanted to come, and this is awesome. Like, I've legitimately heard people say that to cast members.
Yeah, and that's a, in my opinion, that is a great thing, right? Because that's growing the sport, right? I mean, they come to one drag race and they're like, "Holy crap, this is cool! I want to keep coming to this track. I want to keep giving my money to this track, right? Even if the Street Outlaw guys aren't here anymore, like I still want to come here and check this out and maybe build a car, you know? And that's, if you can get one or two people to do that, I mean, gosh, it just kind of multiplies. You know what I mean? It's awesome.
Yeah, they learn. Wait, I can come out here and race my whatever I have in a bracket race? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Bring it on out. And
Yeah.
it's like that's how it all kind of begins and goes. And that's why I think it's important that any racer at every level has to treat every fan like they are the biggest fan on earth. And you see the racers at all levels that get that. And that's, to me, you can't put a price tag on that. You really, really can't.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I mean, well, and that's kind of, you're touching on another point that sometimes is a topic of debate is, a good example at No Prep King races, the fans are there, they want to meet their driver, and they want to interact with their driver. And, sometimes they may catch the driver when they're turning their car around to go to a next round or, you know what I mean? Or they're doing maintenance on it. And then they've got production crew telling them, "Hey, we need you to do this interview real quick. We need you to do this and this and that and this and that. And then, oh, by the way, need to be back in the lanes in 20 minutes." And, another thing that some of the fans may not understand is that we are pulled in like eight or nine different directions at these races. I mean, oh my gosh, and sometimes the fans don't get that, and they're like, "Well, I just wanted to, shake your hand and have you and talk to you a little bit." And it's like, dude, we're trying. It's not anything against anybody. It's just we get pulled every which way.
Oh yeah, that's you get that with people that that might not have a lot of track experience or understand what goes up the run of a heads up car. Funny story is, the guy that I crew for, we were ripping a transmission and converter out of a car at the NMCA finals because we had a catastrophic failure, and these guys were wanting to talk with the car owner, asking him tons of questions about his combo. And he was
Yeah.
like, listen, I'm not trying to be rude, but we've got to get this, out and kind of fix it, And he just kind of jokingly said, if you guys really want to talk, grab a wrench and jump in. And I kid you not, these two dudes said, all right. And it turns out they're actually two couple good wrenches and help us cut a lot of
Really?
time off. But we're sitting there, ripping the transmission and converter out of this car, and these guys are asking, Ray questions, and he's sitting there working on the car, and we're getting all this done. It was an interesting moment, but it doesn't always go like that. And people, maybe they didn't understand that when you got a wrench on these cars, it's not, you're not just changing the jets in a carbonator. There's a lot that's got to happen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. And I try to make as much time as I can for the fans. I mean, like my pit, I don't have, yellow tape wrapped around it. I mean, you can come as go as you want, walk around the car, you can sit in the car, it doesn't really matter to me. And the only time it gets a little like where I need just peace is when I'm putting a tune-up in the car on the laptop. You know what I mean? Like, because it's kind of a process. from start to finish. And if you stop in the middle, you're more than likely going to jack something up or forget something or whatever. You know what I mean? So that's like the only time where I have to just have peace and quiet is when I'm putting tune-up in the car.
Yeah, you don't want to go, I'm going to add 2 pounds of boost to the hit, and someone distraction, you put 20 at the hit, and all of a sudden you're sending rotating parts in the low orbit. You know, that's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I try to explain it. But, then, you know, again, dude, I mean, it's people that just haven't been at drag too much, and they don't really understand it. It's fine. I mean, dude, I don't get upset. I'm just like, okay, I'll start over. I'll do this real quick and talk and then I'll just finish it when I get done, you know, and you tell production to hang on.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy on the media side of things, you know, and having the experience in racing I have, I know when you can approach a driver or team and when you shouldn't do it. And there's other people that might not understand that. And it plays right into it that there's times where you're not going to get the answers you want. And they might be a little short with you when, you know, they just got done, you know, they just had a Chernobyl experience on the track. You know, that's not the time to ask questions about, you know, their thoughts on global affairs and where they got their rods from. That's not the time.
Yeah. I mean, dude, you're right. But at the same time, you just kind of got to take it for what it is. And it's like, you know, yeah, they don't really know any better. And it's just like, all right, I'll answer your questions, you know, maybe not in the best of mood, might be a little short, but yeah, at the same time, it's like, they're here to see us. So you kind of, it's a fine balance, right? I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. It's just, you almost have to live the situation to explain it, right?
Oh yeah, totally.
Just to understand how many directions we get pulled.
And kind of looking off of that, you know, we have, you know, the Horsepower Wars, the 10K drag shootout, which, you know, I help kind of be a part of on, you
yeah,
know, behind the scenes and, you know, do the writing for some of it, you know, I get to see the TV magic behind that and what goes into making a show look exciting and make it pop. And it's sort of like there's this candy wrapper on it at a certain point that people don't understand that it's not all action packed all the time. And where I'm getting with this is, you know, what's something that people might not understand about race night filming that would kind of drive it home where it's like, this isn't the exciting place you think it is.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So yeah. So, all right, we'll talk about race night as far as street filming and street outlaws and all that. So I can tell you the night starts at about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, right? You know, we get there and like when I have people that want to come watch and I'm like, okay, I'll put you on the list, but I can tell you right now, it's going to be a lot of standing around. So you know, we get there at 8 o'clock, you know, we all check in, get in our little pit spots that we have, unload the cars. And then we have our driver's meeting, which takes anywhere from 30 minutes, 45 minutes, if we start arguing, an hour. And then, you know, we decide who's going to race who. And then by now it's like 11 o'clock and the first race is happening. And, you know, that first race happens. And then there's downtime between the next race because we got to change out GoPros. Then we got to film the coin toss. Then we got to film, you know, someone looking at the road and checking it and then going back and warming their car up. And then next thing you know, it's 12 o'clock and the second race is going. It's like, oh my God, 4 hours have passed by and we've only raced twice. Right. So, I mean, we might get six races in a film night, maybe seven. I mean, it's just how it goes. And it's over at like 3 a.m. So from 8 o'clock at night till 3 o'clock in the morning, you race maybe have six races, maybe seven. I mean, that's a normal race night, right? So there's lots of standing around, lots of production things going on, moving around, moving this, moving that, right? And not, you know, for a 4.5 second race or a 4 second race, you know, you only do that six times. So it's not as glamorous as it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, for those that have been to legit street races, it's not anything like what you'll see at like a predetermined location. Or, you know, like here in, you know, Columbus, you'll see people that'll go to a spot, meet up, find who they want to go race, and then go to a spot or something like that. You know, it's definitely not your typical like,
yeah, oh my God,
street racing deal.
Yeah, you know, a normal cash day street race, you know, on a uncontrolled street, you know, you're talking first round with 32 cars. I mean, these guys are lined up, and when the first car goes after they're done racing, the next cars are already doing the burnouts, right? I mean, it's like bam, 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 because you want to the main objective of a cash day is that big is to finish the first round. If you get through the first round, it's pretty much gravy after that, right? Because you've already knocked out half the field, and now you're only having to, you know, watch over a handful of drivers now. So yeah, that's the big difference. Lots of action at a illegal street race versus a controlled street outlaws filming.
Yeah, that's yeah, and like you said, it there is a huge difference for, you know, the only thing that, like you said, that's controlled is, you know, the shutdown of the street and the lights. And a lot of, you know, the lighting stuff, that's just for the TV production of it. You know, if you gave the opportunity for legit street racers to have a shutdown street, oh my God, it'd be chaos. It'd be like a bunch of kindergartners hopped up on pixie sticks. They wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah, they would just be sending cars left and right. You're absolutely right. You know, and yeah, I mean, you're right. You bring up a good point with the lights. I mean, take away the lights and that, like the road we race on, it would be a dark, almost alleyway where you wouldn't be able to see nothing but four taillights. And it's like, okay, I can't even tell what's going on right now.
Yeah.
And you'd have to wait and see who won by when they got back and told you, oh, yeah, I beat them. Or the finish line guy radios back saying, oh, yeah, right lane. I mean, that's all you would really know. And, you know, you can't really show that on TV because nobody's going to watch that, right? They're just, it'd just be the same thing over and over.
Yeah, it's something I've learned, you know, what, you know, you do something, you have to set up to make it look for good for mm-hmm. TV. You're not necessarily manufacturing the outcome, but you have to set it up where it's going to look good on TV. And you can tell a story around it. You know, that's kind of what you got to do. And, you know, kind of going off of that, there's been, you know, some near dust ups and some dust ups on and off camera, and you know it's always kind of it's so hard to describe to people the level of emotion and how that stuff kind of happens. And I know that, you know, one of the more recent ones was you and Chuck had a little bit of a scrape up at Maryland on the starting line. Kind of, you know, what can you tell us the legit story of kind of what happened there and, you know, what that was all about?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, prior to that, you know, Chuck and I would say we were friends, and you know, one thing that for this past season that was really, we really wanted to emphasize to try to bring, you know, some more entertainment factor was the whole team thing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Texas versus Oklahoma versus Mississippi, right? You know, kind of unite some racers together and put a little more stake in the game, right? You know, and because that's entertaining, right? You latch onto a team and you want your team to win. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, Maryland was one of the first races that we had. And I can remember vividly, I can remember the scenario. It ended up being Birdman, which was from Texas, was racing Larry Larson. Well, Larry Larson's car broke. And in order to get some points, Larson was going to stage with his golf cart, you know, and there's opinions about that. And that's a whole nother topic altogether. But anyways, the tower had set up the tree for a single car because they saw Birdman's car and then they saw a golf cart. So they just had it set up for a single tree. Well, as you know, on a single tree, the first lane to stage is going to get the green light and it's going to auto red the other lane. Well, Larson staged first with both bulbs and Birdman's over there spooling up. Well, it automatically dropped the tree red on Birdman's side. So, you know, Chuck kind of started in on the whole, well, Birdman got the red light, so he should be out, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm, you know, trying to kind of, I knew what Chuck meant. I don't think Chuck was being serious about it, but, you know, trying to build some hype around it, I was like, oh, you know, Chuck, you know, thinks Birdman should be disqualified, this and that. Well, you know, Chuck kind of got, kind of took offense to it versus just kind of going with it, you know what I mean, to kind of build up some entertainment and some hype. He actually got upset. And basically was like, why are you buttoning my conversation? And it kind of went from there, you know, kind of escalated. And then here comes the water, right? And that's pretty much all it took, you know. Pretty sure any grown man that gets water thrown in their face is going to respond a certain way, right? Because your only options are to, you know, you can either kind of just not do anything and look like a punk in front of everybody, or you can just do something. So Emotions kind of got high there, and I responded, and it is what it is, right? Unfortunately, friendship's no longer there, but I mean, it happens, right? Chuck and I still have to work together, so we're still, I'd say, cordial, but I mean, that's kind of where it ends right there, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that, like you said right there, you throw water at someone and you don't expect anything to happen. That's a mistake on your part for sure.
Yeah, it's just it's really unfortunate how it all went down. I wish it wouldn't have went down like that, but it is what it is. I mean, throwing water on people is not something that really ever crosses my mind to respond to th things, but everybody's kind of wired differently, so it is what it is.
And the whole wildly different context, we can go off of that on a line of questioning. And if you ever run into fans or people that just or even coworkers that look at you like you're a little off kilter because it's you think it's a great idea to strap yourself into a high horsepower car and try to keep it off the wall and go fast.
Yeah, some of my coworkers think I'm an idiot, but nah, whatever. It's all good. I mean, everybody has their different things they like to do for fun or their hobbies. So, I mean, some people have their opinions, but it doesn't really change what I think or how I feel or what I'm going to do. I mean, at the end of the day, unfortunately, other people's opinions really don't decide what I do. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, I kind of just kind of do what I want, and that's what it is.
Your orange car, you debuted that here in Ohio, if I remember correctly, right?
I did. That would have been at Pacemakers. It would have been Pacemakers. One of their No Prep series. I actually went to their. I can't remember the name of the race, but it was at Pacemakers, and that track was pretty slick, but we went and raced there, and we won the race, and then the next day they had a little shootout, and me being me wanting to race some more, I entered it, and then I ended up kind of scraping the wall a little bit, so my poor car only stayed one color for like a month, but
Yeah,
whatever.
that's I was supposed to be at that race, but I had another obligation I had to go to for work. I wanted to check it out because I knew you were going to be bringing the car up there. And what was funny was that track's only like 40 minutes from my house.
Oh,
And
wow.
I'm getting messages from people asking me if I knew what happened and do you have any pictures? I'm like, dude, I'm, at this other track doing this deal. They're like, oh, Boosted just wadded the car up. I'm like, people have a different definition of what wadded up is. Some
Dude.
people, you know what I'm saying, right?
Dude, it's so funny. Like, after I I'm gonna say I rubbed the wall,
Flesh wound. It was a
Matt.
flesh wound.
It was a flat. I got out, looked underneath it. Am I leaking anything? Nope. Okay. And of course, here comes the emergency crews, and I just got in my car and drove right past them. Had a flat tire, but whatever. I drove into the track, drove back to the trailer. I mean, dude, if I can drive it back, I don't consider that. I'm not going to consider that a crash. I'm just going to consider that rubbing the wall as part of racing. So, whatever. It is what it is. I mean, like I said, I think I was back racing the next weekend.
Yeah, it was funny when people started tech like that were there. They were sending me the pictures. Like, well, send me the pictures. And I saw it. I'm like, oh, that could be fixed between rounds with a little bit of duct tape. That's fine.
Dude, and that's the funny part. Like, I'm pretty sure I won that round, but my front tire was flat, and I was like, "Dang it, I don't have a spare tire." And there's a guy, "Well, you can borrow my wheel and tire." I was like, "Oh, all right, cool." And then I got to look, and I was like, "Well, do I really want to, like, this thing kind of got loose for a reason. Do I really want to do this again?" And the pot for the Saturday race was only like, I think, $2,500. I was like, "Yeah, it's probably not worth it to crash it a second time." So we kind of just, we're like, let's put this on a trailer and call it a day. And that's what we did. But it was still, I mean, I had a lot of fun at that race. There were so many people there. It was a very successful race.
Oh yeah, they that's what again with the cast and when they come to events, it's so awesome to see. I've seen it down at Killcare because Disco doesn't he that's his home track and he lives close by as well. He brings people out with Lutes and those guys and they pack that place out. Just they'll be, it's 95 degrees and people are standing there just wanting to see them draw chips. It's insane to watch. And then
it's awesome.
And then what also makes it cool is that when you see these, you guys at races, you're not mailing it in. You're out there to win.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely right. I mean, you know, we're not just there to
show your parents' money.
No, I mean, dude, if I go that to a track and there's a shootout and I'm entered, I mean, I'm trying to win. You know, I'm not trying to just, put my car a little cruise control tune up in it. No, man, I lost, crap. You know, no, I mean, if I enter a shootout, I'm trying to win. So,
well, is it for you guys? It's almost like, you know, a tough man competition almost, because at a tough man competition, the locals will want to take their best shot against, you know, some outsider, and it's got to probably amp it up even more when you guys are there, because someone wants to, they're going to give you their best shot because they want to say, I beat Boosted GT. So it's, that puts it on a different level.
It is. You're right. And you know, usually when we go to these appearances, if there's no shootout, then they'll have someone, you know, the local hero that wants to race, you know, that has, you know, 300 passes on this track and knows this track like the back of their hand, and they want to race you. And then you're kind of coming in, you know, you may never have been down the track ever. Right. And, you know, you kind of got to figure out real quick what it's going to take, you know, but that makes it exciting, you know, and, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And when you lose, I can tell you, it is the Super Bowl. You have just lost the Super Bowl, and you're going to hear about the Super Bowl loss. But, dude, I mean, I get it. They're excited, so I don't take too much offense to it. So it's all good.
You know, kind of looking at, you know, impromptu, you know, taking the L at the wrong or right time. You know, your significant other, she does a little bit of racing too, and you guys have lined up a few times. You know, what's that kind of like in those situations? You guys put, is it playful or is it pretty much I'm gonna stomp you and there's nothing you can do about it kind of deal?
No, I'm trying to beat her. Oh yeah. I mean we don't tell each other, oh, you want to win this time? No, I mean, if we're legit lining up in a race, I mean, you know, we're trying, I'm trying to beat her. Now, you know, No Prep Kings was a little different just based on points and money at stake and all that. I mean, that was kind of a different strategy that was being played. But in a normal shootout at a No Prep race, or, you know, at appearance stuff like that, I mean, I'm trying to win.
One of the guys from American Racing Hunters, he was racing, he was racing his soon to be wife, and Farkow, he was racing Val Clements, and he had this look on his face after the race that he knew he'd done messed up beating her, because she, you know, it was very, very like the whole build up around it. I thought they were joking. And, you know, it's very interesting when you have significant others racing, when there's that level of competitiveness going on.
For sure. And, you know, it's no different. I mean, she's beat me and I've beat her. And I can tell you sometimes she's, you know, when she's on the losing end, she doesn't really take it very well and gets mad, but yeah, it's all good. It is what it is.
Yeah. And you know, it's being an outlaw again and seeing Kayla win the way she won. That was awesome to see, just to see how everybody was just so happy and how you guys took it. That was definitely with what everybody was, what you guys were having to fight at that race. That was pretty awesome to see.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, dude, we had to, I mean, we had to slam a piston in that motor. I mean, oh my gosh. And I'm in small tires, so I think I went all the way to the semifinals. So I'm still racing. She's still racing. There was a lot going on that race for sure. And it wasn't an easy win. I mean, that thing was just huffing all kinds of smoke and oil and fuel out of that exhaust. And I think the whole side of her car was black by the end of the night from just that poor motor was done.
Oh, yeah. When I went back, I was going to go back to talk to her to get some pictures, and I saw the head off and what was going on. I was like, y'all look like you're going to kind of busy. I'll stop
come back.
I'll just come back, because this is definitely a little more than routine maintenance. She was like, oh, no, it's fine. We're just putting a piston. And I'm like, okay. And then I see the car come up. I'm like, that thing looks and sounds like it's about to die, but she's just in it to win it.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, you know. And when I lost in the semis, I mean, I went back and started helping, and I mean, there was parts we had to rob off my car just to get her car running. I mean, she ended up breaking the throttle body, and thankfully we ran the same throttle body, so we just, you know, snatched the one off my car and the TPS and all that and stuck it on her. So I mean, we made it work, and it was worth it because, you know, she was able to get the win.
Yeah, that was definitely one of those ones watching that go down. I had a lot of respect for what was happening just because of the level of thrash you guys had to do and to make it all work and then for everything to kind of come together like that. And that again, with what they did with Outlaw Armageddon, making it that round robin deal, as soon as I saw that come about, I'm like, all right, that's badass because it's going to give the fans the chance to see more racing and it could potentially shake up how things happen. And lo and behold, when the main event started, the only like OG Street Outlaw that was in the show was Dominator.
Yeah, it was crazy. That was so crazy how that all fell out. I mean, you know, the killers, I call them in quotation marks, that were supposed to win. I mean, you know, out of three passes, something happened to them, right? They had something happen to them. And they got one loss, which, you know, didn't let them go to the main event. And that's what made that race really unique. I mean, you had to be on your game for three straight passes and get three straight wins, or you weren't going to be in the main show. So that was a lot of added pressure because every single, you know, pass counted.
Oh yeah, when people talk about it's like qualifying, I'm like, no, this isn't qualifying. This is you have to
Yeah.
win every time, or you have to be perfect, or you're not going to be in the show. And lo and behold, you saw that happen in a lot of instances. And you saw people have problems that shouldn't have problems, and then you end up having the dude Tropical Thunder in the final. I'm like, who would have penciled that dude in for there as well? It was totally wild.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, but you know, I thought it was great because it was a different set of racers, right? It wasn't the same old. I mean, it was people, you know, it was different. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it was different, and I think it was entertaining and it was very interesting.
Oh, and the level of racing was, absolutely insane. Eric Bain was driving out of his mind. That
Oh my
save he
God.
had, I saw that. I saw him save the car. I swing over, and I was pretty sure his wife's soul was like leaving her body at one point because she was like, not again,
Dude, I saw the right side, the left side. I think I almost saw the front bumper from the starting line somehow. And I was just like, dude, you're crazy. But yeah, it was a hell of a save, dude. And he was in it to win it for sure. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
There's a certain level of luck that comes in that situation, but it's also skill and intuition. And, he hit the nail on the head right there with, doing everything he needed to do to keep that car from, turning into a pile of whoops.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, it was, you know, a little bit of skill and a little bit of luck, and you know, you'll go a long way, right?
Magic
Just always want to
happens.
hope that luck's on your side.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I used to say this when I wrestled in high school. I'd rather be lucky than good any day because lucky has the ability to beat good in a lot of chances.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Now, I kind of always liked it when I'm talking with racers, get their take on different things. And let's say you found out that you just won the lottery and money is no longer an option. You can now race any class you want to race, what would you build or buy?
Oh my gosh. Man, that's a great question. I would love to have a competitive radial car. I mean, I like radial racing. I love Donald Long's races. Just don't tell him that, of course. We don't want to get his ego all spun up. But I love Donald Long's races. I love Radial versus the World and those classes. And I mean, I would probably, if money was no object, I mean, that's probably something I would try to build, you know, a car that would be competitive there, and see just how fast, you know, I could go.
Is that kind of, sticking in the same vein with, the having that whole that street racing outlaw mentality, sticking to radials versus, trying to go more corporate with like, pro mod or, an NHRA ride?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, NHRA is cool too. I just, I guess I don't really understand how, the NHRA and those teams work. I mean, I always thought like you had to lease a car, and it really wasn't ever like your car. You were just kind of leasing the driver's seat. I don't know. It just seems weird to me. I don't know. I don't know how that works. And I would probably just stick to more radial stuff because I know how that works. I mean, you fund everything and then you go out as fast as you can, pretty
Yeah,
much.
it's pretty easy to understand. It's like I put money down, I go fast, that's it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I just haven't, I've never even really researched how the NHRA works and how you even get into a, how you do all that. So.
You can do it like, the independent teams, like someone like Steve Torrance, who owns his own operation, owns his own equipment, it's his stuff. And
Yeah.
that's one way to do it. But I guess another good way to look at it is NHRA Nitro Racing is basically like that scene in The Dark Knight when the Joker sets that big pile of money on fire. That's Nitro Racing.
Okay. Well, I guess if you hit the lottery, then it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I don't. It, like I said, I just don't. I like to do things that I understand how it works and all that. And I've just never really researched how all that NHRA stuff works. So.
Oh, it makes total sense. Definitely makes sense. And it's a completely different universe and world for sure, kind of when you look at that. So yeah, radial racing is it's very, very easy to understand and how it works. And the outcome is, you build the baddest ride and then you show up on race day and show everybody you got the baddest ride.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, dude, if I wouldn't even know where to begin on a Top Fuel setup. Like, I wouldn't even know. I, dude, I gotta be able to do something that I could at least figure out how to start it and
Yeah.
work on it. You know what I mean? Like,
You don't want to sit inside the cockpit going, "Where's the dang
yeah,
starter on this thing? Where's the squeaker?"
where's the key for this? What do I, where, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. I that's why I think I would probably relate more to a door car or, radio car.
Well, you go that route, Palmer's got that nitro powered pro mod, which is, that's a whole different level of, oh my God, what the hell are you thinking?
Yeah, that thing's insane, dude. I pretty sure he was at Tulsa and I was there and that thing was insane. Like I was on the starting line and it sounded like the world was coming to an end. And when that thing took off, it was just like,
Oh,
wow.
the NHRA is terrified of that car. They are absolutely
Yeah,
terrified because the last thing they want to see is a door car going 300 freaking miles an hour.
it's awesome. That thing is so awesome, but oh my God.
Oh, yeah. The SFI people just look at that thing and start sweating because there's no way that they could come up with a set of rules to make that thing even remotely like legitimately what they want it to be.
That's awesome, dude. That is so awesome.
Oh, it's and I was, Marty Chance bought a Nitro Coupe, I do believe, and he's talking about developing torque converters for nitro cars and having Nitro Pro Mod racing. And on the surface, I'm like, that would be the most insane thing to ever see is have an 8-car shootout field of those things. Even if they're detuned to like 80%, it still would, it would melt people's minds.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, Palmer's car. I mean, I. Oh my God. I like having your hands over your ears. It did nothing. It literally. I thought my brain was gonna rattle out of like just ooze out of my ears, and I was just gonna combust right there because it was just crazy on the starting line.
Yeah, the first time I ever shot nitro cars trackside, I've been around, you've been at countless NHRA races growing up, and when you're in the stands, yeah, they're loud, yeah, it's crazy, but when you're standing like a foot and a half away from them along the wall, and they drop the hammer and go by, it changes how you look at life in general. Not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I mean, I nearly bit the tip of my tongue off because I wasn't ready when he dropped the hammer on that cruise patch car.
No.
Literally, it was like, it was awesome at the same time. I was like, that was absolutely not what I was expecting, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, dude, I can't. I've never been on the starting line for a Top Fuel like a legit dragster like that. But I've been up like way up in the stands, and even way up in the stands, it sounds like you're right next to it. So I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's a total sensory overload experience between the smell of the nitro, the vibration and everything. It's nuts. And the
Yeah.
only thing that like makes it even more insane that you got to think about too is then you got the guys that ride the nitro Harleys. You know.
Oh, dude, no way. I'm out.
Yeah, that's a big pile of nope.
There's no way. I mean, I've owned a couple motorcycles and, just little, 750 street bikes, and I cannot, dude. Even guys that go down the track on like these 1000s, I'm just like, dude, I'm out. Like, I just I'm out, and I can't imagine the Harley, those Harley guys that do that out in HRA, dude. There's just no way.
Oh, it's, Larry McBride went like a 550 on a nitro Harley. I mean,
No way. It's no way, dude.
that's just like, to me, that's a level of crazy. But then you have the guys that like race in the XDA with, Jason Miller's deal that are on, extended swing arm turbo liter bikes that are running in the 640s at 200, damn near 250 miles an hour.
Yeah,
And those things are
insane.
like one wheel in it down the track, and seeing those bikes do that in person and being at the top end, I'm like, that's, you got to see Jesus when you're going that fast. That's
Oh my
nuts.
God. Yeah, you're like one mistake away from just not having a good day.
Yeah. And I've seen people, re I've seen a dude wreck a nitro Harley at the track, and it's terrifying. And the dude popped
Ugh.
right up and started walking towards his bike.
No
Like,
way.
he was just like, he was m like mad that he wrecked. And we were in the media center, and they had the trauma flight crew there for the helicopter, and they're freaking out, like they're thinking they gotta mobilize and go get this dude. And he's like trying to pick up his bike and push it back to the pits, and they're radioing the paramedics like, make sure he's not in shock, make sure he's not in shock. And they're talking like, no, he's good, and he's just pushing his bike down the track.
Yeah, he's just like, whatever, just another day.
Yeah, hey, I gotta find the parts to fix this. That, yeah, I'm with you there. I'm like, you know what? I will. It's sort of like, I will gladly watch you drink that last beer and try to dance, but don't expect me to get out there with you because I'm not about that life.
Yeah, exactly. I need four tires, and then I'm good.
Yeah. I need my blankie of metal around me.
Yeah, my safe spot, my safe zone.
Yeah,
Yeah.
my safe space is knowing that if, this thing goes upside down, that there's at least some tubing around me that's going to protect
Something
me.
around me. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, Chris, our time here on the Dragzine podcast is coming to an end, and I like to give my guests their opportunity to do their best John Force impersonation and give shout outs and thank sponsors and thank whoever they want and tell people where you can be found at, just pump up in general what you got going on. So I'll turn the floor over to you and let you do your thing.
Sure. Well, I don't know if you really want me to impersonate John Force all the way because, John Force likes to cuss a lot and then he gets fined. So I don't want to get fined. So
I can deal with
maybe.
Chester Moist Muffins or whatever his name is. I can deal with
Oh
that.
yeah, no man, he's on vacation right now, so I can't do it either. But oh man, I just for what we got going on with our program, I'm sure you already know, but like both cars, I still have both cars, yellow and orange car, and they're both Team Z cars. So Team Z has been over backwards for us. D-Bomb Tuning, he's the main guy. He's like the foundation of my program. I mean, he does the initial tune-ups for all my cars, and then we kind of take it from there. And then of course you got VP Racing, who's been behind us forever. Those guys, Pro Torque Joe, love him to death. He's awesome. And then of course HPL, which was a subsidy of Precision Turbo. HPL Oil, those guys are great. They support us 100%. And then I got a local buddy too, my buddy Francisco here. He's kind of, no one really knows about him, but he does a lot of fab work as well. He does a lot of stuff for me. So I mean, that's about it for me, as far as that goes. We kind of try to keep our program somewhat small. Don't have a whole lot of sponsors per se, but we try to do more with less around here. So
you know, where can people kind of catch you guys on social media to, you know, see your programs and what you got going on?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I've got my Facebook page, which is, of course, look up Booster GT. And then Instagram is also Booster GT. gosh, I do have a website, which I'm really, really bad about maintaining it, but it's boostedgt.com. And there's some stuff on there, like you can get little die-cast cars of the yellow car on there, and maybe some shirts and hats and all that fun stuff. And I try not to... I try to set the prices on what I would pay for stuff. So there's like a $20 shirt, and that's the most you'll pay for a shirt is $20. Like, you know, I never can picture myself paying $30 for a t-shirt. So I don't set my prices like that. I pretty much set them at what I would pay. So anyways, shirts, hats, all that fun stuff on there. Check it out. We're always making posts on Facebook with new stuff and pictures and all that cool things that we've got going on.
Show wise, when can people expect more stuff to drop, or, you know, what's going on there? Where can we catch it on the old TVs?
So of course, Discovery Channel, you know, there's No Prep Kings, which just ended season 3. And then we have, of course, the Street Outlaws, the original series, which is the racing that is on the street. We have filmed half of a new season, and you will see a certain orange car on there on Big Tires, and I can tell you it's a little more figured out than it was on No Prep Kings, because one was, you know, No Prep Kings was maybe filmed a little bit earlier than the street stuff, so that'll be on there. Of course, Monday nights, I do believe the new season for us will probably be in April-ish sometime, maybe, whenever we finish this season of the street stuff, they'll probably go right into airing it, so, but other than that, we're getting ready to start back up No Prep Kings in March as well. We're going to be filming kind of both the shows at the same time, so that's going to be crazy. But just expect new stuff coming out very soon.
Awesome. So there you have it, folks. Make sure you follow Chris online. And, you know, when you see him at the track, if he's got more than a screwdriver in his hand or he's messing with his laptop, leave him alone. Let him do his thing. But, you know, definitely appreciate you coming on the show, Chris, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it, brother.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Chris for stopping by. And as always, may your reaction times be crisp and your win lights bright. Until next week, folks.